You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time for our weekly catch-up with National Party MP James Meagher.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. Last week, the government announced it would be removing funding for the cultural background reports used in sentencing, as well as the Auckland regional fuel tax. For our weekly catch-up with National, I spoke to MP James Meagher about these announcements. I also asked Meagher about his background in politics, as this is our first interview with him. Here is that interview. Since this is your first interview with 95BFM, can you tell our listeners a bit about yourself and your political career so far?
Yeah, sure, thanks. So I'm the MP for Rangitata, which is an electorate down in mid-south Canterbury. So it basically runs from Rakaia River down to the Rangitata River, then takes in a sliver of South Canterbury, including Timaru and Pleasant Point. So that's where I grew up, down in South Canterbury. I've got a public law background, so I was a litigation lawyer at Simpson Grierson for a few years, and actually worked in Parliament before that. So I worked as a press secretary for Paula Bennett for a year, and also in opposition under Bill English and Simon Ridges.
What are your main goals as an MP?
I think the number one goal for me, especially as a backbench MP and an electorate backbench MP, is just to make sure that I represent the views and concerns of my constituents in Parliament. So whenever I'm in Wellington in Parliament, that's my number one goal, is making sure that issues that are important to people in Mid-South Canterbury are aired up here in Wellington, and I do my job as a legislator. And also, one goal of mine is to make sure we get through our busy workload on the Justice Committee. So I'm chairing the Justice Committee, and I'm really keen to make that committee as collegial a workspace as possible. So I think they are the two really key things that I'm interested in this term. The other one would be, of course, it'd be great to get a members bill drawn from the ballot. I've got a lot of good ideas, but sometimes that's just the luck of the draw. So that's a goal, but by no means something that I can guarantee.
So the government announced that it will be scrapping the Auckland regional fuel tax. Can you tell us about what considerations went into this decision?
Yeah, so I'm wary of wading into this because I'm not an Aucklander. And so we didn't get faced with the regional fuel tax down in South Canterbury. And I know that Aucklanders did, and it was about 11 and a half cents a litre on fuel at a time when cost of living was really tough and people were finding it hard to get enough money to spend on their fuel, let alone their groceries and rent. So we just thought that it wasn't the right time for a tax like this, specifically on Auckland. And Minister Simeon Brown has, I understand, spoken with the Mayor and Auckland Council a number of times about how they do pay for those core infrastructure projects that are needed in Auckland. And he's going to look at things like congestion charging and legislation to allow the council to have other funding tools. We just think that a tax, an extra tax at this point on those who can least afford it, is not the way to go.
The government has highlighted that they want to focus on reducing congestion and increasing productivity, particularly in those high populated cities like Auckland. Would you agree that the fuel tax encouraged more people to use public transport and therefore was able to reduce congestion?
Well, I don't necessarily think so, because all it did was add on cost of petrol at the tank. So, yeah, there might have been some people who reduced their private vehicle usage and went to public transport, but actually a lot of people used their cars to get to places where public transport isn't an option. Like I know, for instance, the links between South Auckland and the airport, for some of the airport employees aren't particularly good at the moment, and so they wouldn't have had an option of getting out of their private vehicle and getting into public transport. So I think you've got to look at funding tools which accurately reflect the usage of the roads and where people are trying to get to. That's why congestion charging, value capture, tolling, other things like that might be a better way of doing it. So that if you are in your car and you're using it to get to places where you just can't access public transport, you're not penalised for that. Whereas something like congestion charging, where you might be charging people a bit extra to get into town, might actually persuade more people to get into public transport because those routes are available.
Right, so it would essentially be a fuel tax but more targeted towards those who could be using other measures of transport like public transport that would reduce congestion.
Well, it just to be, I guess we'll be clear, it wouldn't be a fuel tax because it wouldn't be charged on fuel. It'd be more similar to how we're looking at road user charging being expanded across the network so that you can more accurately put the cost burden on those who use the roads to contribute to those roads. I think you could call it, I think there's been different words for value capture congestion charging, but the idea is to make sure that it's a lot fairer. Because the other thing is that when you have a fuel tax, and especially in Auckland, an additional 11.5 cents, if you have a less fuel-efficient vehicle, you'll end up paying more because you use more fuel, more petrol, per kilometre than other cars. And the people who tend to use less fuel-efficient vehicles are those at the bottom end, those who can't afford, you know, brand-new hybrids or brand-new trucks or anything like that. So we think there's an equity and a fairness issue involved in here as well, and that's why we're looking to move towards more road user and congestion type charging than pure fuel taxes.
I also wanted to talk to you about the government scrapping funding for cultural reports as well as the prison population reduction targets that were set by Labor previously. The government has said that its priority is reducing crime. How will this move contribute to that?
Well, let's take them one at a time. So the cultural reports question is an interesting one. So we're going to be a bit clear. The reports themselves aren't being scrapped. It's some of the government funding for the cottage industries that have been set up to run those reports. So what used to happen is, and I know defence lawyers are very busy, but lawyers would put pleas and mitigation into court to put their defendants or their client's best case forward, give some of the context, the background, some of the reasons that might have gone into their offending. So then the court could take that into account when delivering a sentence. Now, that's all perfectly fine, and that is still able to happen. What we want to change is this cottage industry which sprung up, which was essentially you'd go out and you'd contract someone who's never met the client, doesn't know anything about them, to produce a template report outlining a whole bunch of sort of tick box issues to put that before the court. We didn't think that was appropriate. We didn't think it was appropriate for taxpayers to be funding that when some of that money could be better spent on victims of crime. So that's what we decided to do in that space. And then on the second part around the prisoner target, prisoner reduction targets, we support targets in general. We think that the previous government probably didn't use targets enough and didn't measure themselves against what they intended to deliver enough. The one issue with the prisoner reduction target was that it wasn't actually doing anything to keep communities safe. And there was very little going on in terms of what do we do with our men and women when we release them back on the streets in terms of reintegration into society and what rehabilitation programs are available to them in prison. For example, if you're on remand in prison at the moment, you're not able to access any rehabilitation programs because you haven't been sentenced. So that's a real issue. You've got people spending a lot of time in prison, sometimes months and years on remand, who can't actually get the rehabilitation and the help that they need in order to make them productive members of society. So we've thought that we would get rid of those reduction targets. They haven't done anything to reduce the amount of crime. They're not keeping people safe, and they're not actually helping prisoners reintegrate into the system. And we will roll out some changes in that area, which will hopefully see some better outcomes.
So Labor did state last year that they would not implement prisoner reduction targets if re-elected, but they have said that they were needed at the time to prevent overcrowding in prisons. Is this something that you would agree was necessary at the time?
Well, I think the ambition of having fewer people in prisons is a good one. We generally want no one in prisons because we don't want any crime happening. But I think the previous Labor government's focus was on the wrong area. I think they were trying to reduce the costs of incarceration and reduce the number of people in prisons just by letting people out and putting no real controls or no rehabilitative programs in place. Our view is that we want to take a social investment approach to all of this, including incarceration. So we want to make sure that we're investing in the bottom end, so before people are getting into prison, to make sure that don't get there in the first place, and that when they do stay there, they're working hard to make themselves more productive and better members of society. But there's another aspect to this, and that is that, you know, there is a place for prisons, and there is an incarceration and a punishment and detention aspect to prisons. When people break the law, commit crimes, essentially assault public decency, the public need to have trust in the justice system that there are consequences for actions. So part of being in prison is detention, is keeping people safe, is punishment for the crime. Gone are the days of the Ivory Knight 2-3-2, but this is the sort of this is the retributive system that we have in place of that. So I'm very comfortable with where we're heading in that system. I'm chairing the Justice Committee, so a lot of these changes will come before me. So I'm wary of getting too far ahead of preempting what's going to come up. And I also want to run a pretty neutral line when I'm chairing the committee so that both sides of the table get a chance to have their say on these issues too. So I am looking forward to the busy workload though.
And I just lastly want to touch on cultural reports. Do you see any benefit in the courts considering someone's background in criminal cases to help understand what may have contributed to them offending?
Yep, absolutely. And as I was never a criminal lawyer, but as someone who did a plea and mitigation years ago as part of their law degree, understand the value in a defence lawyer or the court providing or being furnished with information about an offender's background, some of the mitigating factors that led to their offending, some of the reasons why certain kinds of sentences or punishments might not be appropriate, and there could be other ways of doing things. I was up visiting the drug and alcohol courts up in Waitakere in January, and I met several of the men who went through that program and are now essentially peer support advocates and caseworkers and have been clean for several years. And that's an example of a system being put in place which treats the actual problem while still ensuring that offenders recognise and account for their offending. So I think that it's perfectly appropriate for that stuff to go before the court, just not in the taxpayer-funded way for that cottage industry that had been happening previously.
How will the government ensure that access to those cultural reports are equitable, as we know that crime and poverty are intrinsically linked?
Yeah, so there is always going to be access to the cultural reports. You can do them without cost. So whānau members and family members can produce reports and can input into the defence lawyer who can collate this information and present to the court. What's been happening though is it's become highly professionalised, and these industries are being set up where, you know, as I mentioned before, people would write these reports without knowing the offender at all or knowing the defence lawyer's client. So how can that be an accurate reflection on who they are, their background, the mitigating circumstances? So yeah, there are some equity issues there we have to look at. Part of that is the wider justice system and access to justice and the efficiency and speed of the system, time spent on remand, the levels of legal aid and maybe some of the disparities between prosecution and defence funding. So they are all things we need to look at. And actually, if people are interested, next week the Ministry of Justice is before the Justice Committee for a three-hour in-depth review. So we'll be probably going across a lot of those issues over the 3 hours that they are there. So I would encourage people, if they have some time in the morning, to tune in from, I'd have to say, around about 9 a.m. on the next Thursday. And there'll be a very interesting discussion about all those issues there.
That was National's James Meagher on his goals as a politician, as well as the government announcing it will remove funding for cultural background reports and the Auckland regional fuel tax.
That was our catch-up with National Party MP James Meagher.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.